This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Brown noser, butt kisser, suck up, and a few more names unsafe for radio are often given to people who are just being polite. There can be something suspicious about a person who shows genuine interest in another with no clear motive. What's the angle? After all, our culture pays more attention to online rants than compliments and rewards snarky opinions on Twitter with more followers. Paul Ford prides himself on being polite. He's a founding partner of the software company Postlight and host of the tech-based podcast Track Changes. We found his manifesto, How to Be Polite, on the Medium website. And Paul, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Were you always so polite?
I have been polite for much of my life, and I didn't know I was polite, but people started pointing it out in high school as a character flaw. When I was 12, 13, I started to read etiquette books, and for me, it was a little bit of an entree into the adult world. How do people behave? How are you supposed to behave? And I think like any typical adolescent, I had no faith in the people around me to educate me, so I would just buy 50-cent used books. And learn about things like how to address an envelope in the proper manner. That led me to just sort of be more aware of how I was behaving in public.
So the kids in high school might have made fun of you, but when did you see it paying off?
One of the great things about being polite is it teaches you to navigate a bureaucracy. And we're surrounded by bureaucracies, colleges, high schools, health insurance, large radio organizations, whatever, you have to negotiate with the social framework around you. And that is one of those situations where honey catches so many more flies. If you are just sort of quiet and patient and smile, the person behind the desk is so much more likely to help you out. And it's also just, you just create a little less friction wherever you go. Now, it's difficult, right? Because sometimes you need to create that friction. I'm a big, tall man, and so I think people are a little more inclined to listen to me in our culture than if I wasn't, and so I get to have it both ways. But at the same time, there really is something to be said for just sort of being quiet and nice to have around.
But you talked about catching more honey and being able to maybe get through the receptionist. So is it strategic? Is it a long game?
I don't really think that way. You know, I wrote that essay when I had just turned 40, and I was in a very sort of sour mood. And for some reason, that was the thing that I wanted to share with the world on the day after I turned 40. So I was very surprised when it took off. But it just is an aspect of my personality that, especially as I've worked professionally for many, many years, people who are pretty aggressive and pretty assertive, who are great to work with, were always taken aback by how much I would just kind of put up with insane behavior around me. And I was like, no, you know, we're just give it time. And I would usually get pretty good results. And I would get them with lower drama. And over time, I realized that maybe this was a pretty good strategy. But the way that I am is just the way that I am. I'm not smart enough or cunning enough to really use this as a platform for getting what I want.
Okay, well, give us some tips, Paul, if you would. What are some of the do's and don'ts for someone trying to be more polite? What works for you?
Oh, my Lord. Well, see, this is tricky because I think it differs from person to person. It's almost 100% being an okay listener. You know, it's not expressing your views, not trying to get what you want, but actually waiting, listening, giving people a minute, taking a breath. And that just plays out a lot of different ways. In that piece, I describe what's essentially a party trick, which is that when you get to the part of the conversation where you talk about what you do for a living at a party, no matter what they say, just go, oh, boy, that sounds hard. Because everybody secretly thinks their job is kind of hard, or at least most people do. And they always appreciate if you acknowledge how difficult their life might be. And I did that once with someone whose job was literally to put jewelry on celebrities. That was her profession. And I was just like, wow, that actually sounds really challenging. It was a great conversation because most people didn't acknowledge that it was, you know, she woke up every day and had to figure out what to wear because she was going to put a necklace on Jennifer Lopez, which is a high-stress situation.
So you don't talk about yourself?
If I can avoid it, but that's just natural modesty. I don't also have that much to say about myself.
You know, so is this hard for you, an interview, you know, talking about yourself and your politeness?
Well, if you'll notice, we haven't really provided any particular personal and professional details. We're just having a perfectly amiable conversation. So this is a very comfortable zone. I enjoy this.
You haven't said how hard my job is.
Well, I know how hard your job is. I mean, the thing is, I don't want to throw that out in the middle of this because it could put you on the spot. I mean, we're recording an interview.
Well, okay, so that's a good tactic. Showing interest in someone's job. But what are some of the don'ts? What should you definitely not do?
You know, one of the things I point out in the piece is any physical invasion. People can really get bummed out when you touch their hair, when you get into their world, when you don't fully acknowledge them as a person. And that's really what you got to be thinking about. You know, and a lot of times, this is where it's tricky, is that you might feel that you're being funny or flirtatious or coy or cute by touching somebody's hair or sort of poking at them or saying something a little negative and ironic about them. And the reality is if they're not having a great day and they're not into that, they're going to walk away and feel kind of invaded and bummed out. And not their life isn't over and you're not an evil person if you did that. It's just that instead of them feeling that you really wanted to be there with them for that moment, they're going to feel that you were kind of going through life and saw them as one of the many props that is standing up around you.
How about now, Paul? You know, we're in this contentious election cycle, very polarized population. Does that make having polite conversation more difficult?
Well, I have the advantage of living in New York City and being surrounded by people who are pretty much ideologically in tune with me, without naming that particular ideological tune. So I'm not tested every day, but I did go recently visit my mother in rural Maryland, and there are very strong opinions floating around down there. And, you know, you just, if you push hard on the weather and you push hard on how it's important that everybody gets a job. I mean, you can talk politics, but this is a tricky one because some of the dialogue is just pure provocation, just pure trolling and poking things with pins. And there's no real easy response to that. You can't be like, well, I don't know if I agree with that incredibly racist thing you said. And then they go, well, no, I'm just being ironic. I value your free speech. And you just kind of have to shrug. There's no polite framework for dealing with that. That's just people aggressively being their worst selves in order to get a provocation. And there's no responsibility that a person has to respond to that in a polite and respectful way. But you can look them in the eye and be like, okay, I got it, and walk away.
Well, I'm thinking about so many examples that we have of wildly ambitious, even abusive people that rise to the top. You know, they demean others. They show who's boss. Do you have any examples of powerful, polite people that you look to?
Ooh, that's a tough one. You know, actually, I have to say the current president, it seems very respectful on a day-to-day basis. And I think that there are quite a few political leaders who do end up at least somewhat respectful. And then there's people like Lyndon Johnson who were just, you know, would just scream at you and humiliate you.
And go to the bathroom while you were waiting.
Exactly, right? Like just those are very grim scenarios. I will say one thing I've observed is that occasionally wildly ambitious people who you just can't even tolerate for 5 minutes because they're so busy trying to climb on top of you, once they get the pole position, I've seen this in editorial and I've seen this in various parts of my life. Once they get the role, they often calm down and start to be a little bit better. Although sometimes they really don't. It's just a tricky one. It's a good, if you're a certain kind of narcissist and you can just plow over people and continually insist that they do what you want and you can connect that to making lots of money, you can get away with it for an entire career. And unfortunately, it does seem that that's one of the most efficient ways to create leadership in a large organization is to just have a screaming crybaby on the top.
Paul, thank you very much for speaking with us.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Paul Ford, he's founding partner of the software company Postlight and host of the tech-based podcast Track Changes. He's also super polite. And there's a link to his manifesto on politeness at our website, wordofmouthradio.org. You can go there if you please. Although political correctness emerged as a subject of scorn in this election cycle, our culture does value sensitivity and politeness. Why else would we spend so much time teaching children good manners? And yet, as adults, there are times when formalities and etiquette feel strained or out of date, or maybe inefficient. Given that, and acknowledging that public radio carries a reputation of being overly polite, we decided to ask around the office if there was one social expectation or courtesy you wish would go away, what would it be?
I would do away with the obligation to bless people after they sneeze.
Well, you mean saying, like, God bless you?
Yes.
What about Gesundheit?
I think it's all of the things that you need to acknowledge that someone's having a bodily function.
It would be awesome if we could just do away with thank you cards. I know that sounds awful, but...
Okay, so we can edit this because I think it would just be I'd be allowed to fart or make fart noises.
Definitely handshakes and hugs with people you don't really care about that much.
I mean, like, what if they care about you, but you don't care about them?
I personally prefer to just wave at people.
You know, everyone poops, everyone farts. It's a thing. I mean, I don't want this on the radio. I mean, I'm thinking while I'm talking about what I'd rather say.
Someone asks you how your day is, and you have to say, great. And it would be more comforting to me to say, if someone said, how are you? I could say, I'm really miserable today, but that's not your problem. Have a nice day.
Dress code.
Dress code?
Yeah. I wish it didn't matter what we wore. You just wear whatever you feel like.
No limits?
I mean... I feel like there are limits that I would impose on other people. So, you know what, just to be ideologically consistent, I want to say, yeah, no limits.
Random members of the NHPR staff there admitting social expectations that they wish would fade away. For me, it's that kind gesture of holding a door for somebody, which often happens here when people are 15, 20 yards behind me and feel like they have to run in order to make it up there and then have to say thank you, and then they hold the next door for you, and then you say thank you to them, which often just feels a little awkward, but sometimes a little bit funny too, which means you can have a little bit of a laugh or a smile with a stranger who was also observing these social conventions, which I guess is what being polite is all about.